Welcome back to the Roundtable's remote broadcast from Tanglewood. I'm Ian Pickus. It's fitting that Tanglewood's annual 4th of July concert features Jackson Browne this year, because few artists have had such a big influence on the sound of American popular music over the past 50 years. From his days as a youth prodigy in Greenwich Village to Laurel Canyon's songwriting partnerships with groups like the Eagles, to a solo career that has brought him to arenas and radio speakers around the world, Browne has garnered praise from fans and fellow musicians alike for his keen sense of melody and touching lyrics. A social and political activist, Browne has sold millions of records en route to enshrinement in both the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. He's released nearly 20 studio and live albums. His latest concert film, I'll Do Anything, Live in Concert, came out last month from Inside Recordings. Browne's 4th of July visit to Tanglewood marks his first stop in Lenox in 15 years. He will also stop by the late Levon Helm's Hudson Valley Barn for a pair of midnight rambles beginning July 12th. Jackson Browne may be synonymous with Southern California, but it's my pleasure to welcome him to the Northeast and to the Roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Ian.
Well, your first gig at Tanglewood was 1973. Do you remember that concert?
I do, actually. But it's funny what you remember about a show. I mean, for me, it was a first, and I didn't have much information about Tanglewood then, so I didn't really know any of its history. And I just remember, you know, I remember the backstage and, you know, what was going on with my family and what was, you know. So it was, it was actually in subsequent years that I began to get a sense of what Tanglewood means, you know, to the people that go there year after year and for all the classical music programs.
Well, normally this week belongs to James Taylor, who's not playing this year because of he's making a new album. So
yeah.
That's been put off. Did you talk to him at all? I mean, this is his backyard, more or less.
I know, it's really his show, and I know I didn't talk to James, but I left it the chance to take this show because it's really a well-known thing. I mean, people talk about James's 4th of July show, you know, in California, too. It's really like it's very well-known to be his, and it was an opportunity to try to do something, you know, do something special for 4th of July.
What do you have planned for them?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, aside from sort of thinking about it a lot, I don't plan a lot. I mean, we have way more songs than we can perform in one show. And the band I'm playing with is a band that is very eclectic. Sarah Watkins and her brother Sean are friends of mine who invite me to play with them all the time in L.A. And so there's just, I mean, every day we go to soundcheck and we, very often we remember a song that we didn't remember, that we didn't know we knew. So it's a very changing set. You know, we don't really, and on top of that, the audience is generally calling for songs, and I make it a point to do some of the songs that they call for at a couple of different intervals. So, I mean, it's not like I signal them now is the time. You know, I mean, they're just yelling for these songs all through the show. So, I can't really tell you exactly what happened. I know that a good friend of mine who's a songwriter that I wrote some songs with on. And sang one of his songs on Running an Empty. Danny Korchmo is going to be there. And he used to play with James quite a bit. I was really knocked out to hear. And actually, he still plays with James. And he just wound up playing with James and Carole King, you know, on their world tour. And I recorded one of his songs. He was in my band during Running an Empty, so I was thinking I was going to do, I think I'll do Shaky Town. I mean, but I can't really tell you what I'm going to do. And if I did, I might not remember to do what I said I was going to do. Also, I've got a couple friends of mine who are coming to play with me when I'm through playing with Sarah and Sean, and they're going to be around. So it's going to be kind of an eclectic gathering, you know, of musicians. And of course, there may be one or two surprises that I wouldn't really want to put out there in advance. But, you know, that's just the way I do it. I don't really like to, you know, I don't like to plan a show and then do the same show every night for a month. That's not as exciting as seeing what happens, you know.
Well, it was something of a trick question because your DVD, I'll Do Anything, is referring to your approach on stage, which is you kind of welcome that interaction with the audience. Did you always do that?
No, I evolved out of my solo shows, where, you know, eventually, like audiences used to be very, you know, very quiet and wait to see what I did, and eventually people began yelling for stuff that I hadn't heard yet, and something kind of magical happened when I began just taking a shot at doing these songs. I mean, for one thing, they call for really obscure songs. Some of them call for songs that I've never done. And at one time at Albert Hall in England, I said, oh, you know, I don't think that I'm not sure I could get through that. I haven't, you know, I don't think I've sung that in 30 years. And the response was, oh, come on, you know, give it a try. You know, and I said, okay. And so with that sort of permission to try and not, you know, not necessarily like the covenant of like, I'm coming here with, you know, totally prepared show, you know, like, you have permission to give it a shot. And as a matter of fact, on that occasion, I don't think I remembered the last verse, which actually, as it turned out, is not necessarily as good as the first two verses anyway. So it's a strange filter. It's a filter in which people call for what they remember and I sing what I can remember. And it just sort of develops so that it has a kind of magic quality where the audience is pretty involved. More so than they would be if they were passively sitting as if they were watching a prepared presentation that doesn't change from night to night.
And you'll even go as far as to change lyrics that were one way 30, 35 years ago and now aren't.
Well, I have done that, yeah. Yeah, occasionally. I mean, I've sung revisions of songs too. Like, you know, very, very often people would call for cocaine. Now I know, and the audience knows, that the guy yelling for cocaine is sort of maybe in a kind of a time warp, you know, where he's back in 1978 and he's maybe living the life that I led and in that era, you know, and is, you know, wants to hear that, you know, songs of excess and licentious behavior and, you know, the high life, you know. And so I say I can sing it, you know, but you might have to listen to the rehab verses and everybody laughs, and, you know, and really it's a way of taking stock, you know.
Turn up Main, looking for that girl who sells cocaine. Cocaine, put it all around my brain. Mama, come here quick. That old cocaine about to make me sick. Cocaine.
I mean, so there are a whole bunch of, like, you know, sort of like ruefully, you know, wiser now lyrics, you know, to cocaine. But it's interesting because my audience has been there for a long time, and people always tell me when they came to my music, when they came to listen to me, or where they were the first time, or how many times they've come. And there's something about the passage of time, you know, that I think very like James Taylor, actually. You know, people, I used to hear James's live broadcast, you know, from Tanglewood. He'd say, see you next year. And I think, I really wondered if that was, you know, was that right? Like, you know, what, you know you're going to be here every year. And really at this stage, this point in my life, I really think that's a very beautiful thing, comforting thing, you know.
Well, you haven't shown any signs of slowing down at all. Do you feel like you are?
Well, I notice that there's quite a difference in my ambition. You know, I think that I'm as ambitious as ever, but it has to do with the quality of what I'm doing and not so much the quantity. I don't feel like trying to knock it. I was always the slowest, you know, writer among all my friends, you know. It took me forever, and I'm still writing songs that I started a long time ago. And I'm kind of, in that regard, I suppose it means that I'm more ambitious, that there's something I want from that song besides a finished song. So sometimes they're the repository of a certain amount of reflection. So I'm actually eagerly awaiting to see what happens as I start my next album, because I've got a lot of songs that I've started and haven't finished or haven't really demanded that they be finished. And something good happens with that. I mean, but slowing down, I mean, if you ask if I'm slowing down, I'd say, yeah, the process is, you know, slowing down a lot. It takes a long time to write songs. And what's more is that I don't think that there, it's not as if there's any momentum, you know, in my career to take advantage of. You know, it's really, I mean, in a way, at a certain point, new people come to my music when they come to it. And some people, I mean, there are plenty of young people in my audience, but there are quite a few people that are my age, you know, and everywhere in between. So I guess the music business has changed such that, so much, you know, it's just changed so much. And now there are all kinds of interesting alternative ways to reach your audience. And those are interesting to me. And I think actually, as opposed to making a video and selling it, you could simply release the film on YouTube and reach way more people.
Right.
They're not paying you for it, but you're reaching quite a few more. And so there's an interesting, you know, fork in the road. There's a crossroads there. I mean, do you just show up everywhere and play? And for that matter, if I want to sing a new song, and I've got some new songs that I'd love to sing, but I don't really want to see them on YouTube yet. I don't want to hear them. I don't want to see like a little shaky handheld, you know, camera, a telephone, you know, like shot of my new song, and I see that on YouTube like a year before I'm able to make a record of it. So I don't do new songs, and I really notice that I've got so many songs that I could do. I change my set list constantly and do new songs all the time. By new songs, I mean songs that I haven't done in years, perhaps, you know. And there are plenty of songs to choose from, and I mean, making a new album will be a very different experience than it used to be. It used to be that this was where people heard your new songs. It feels very different to me.
I mean, people always talk about how good you were so early. You were in your teens writing songs that went national. What was the goal when you were that age compared with what you've told us about how you approach new music now in the age of cell phone, video, and YouTube? I mean, how has that changed the approach just from the songwriting itself?
Oh, interesting question. I don't think I had goals. I had goals like get to the other side of the country, you know, in a car. Forgive me for if I say that like the goals of being more and more famous don't exactly excite me. It hasn't really stoked my fire for a long time. I think it was part and parcel to my growing up in, you know, late 60s and 70s. That was what you did to travel. That's what you did to get to see the world. You got to play all over the country. Interesting, because I was just reflecting on this the other day, but I play in places like Tanglewood or Ravinia, you know, I mean, really large audiences for me. I mean, those are the big audiences. And occasionally I play in larger places, I opened some shows for Jimmy Buffett. But really, the kind of auditorium, like this DVD we just did called I'll Do Anything, a place in a small theater in Colorado, and that's really the kind of show that I get the closest to what I really think I'm best at, you know, which is playing in a really beautifully as controlled as possible, you know, audio environment, and with an audience that's really close enough to interact with in a very intimate way. And I felt that was going on like right away, like when I made my first album, it was kind of places I began playing. I wound up making, you know, records that were way, way more popular. I wound up spending several years playing in basketball arenas, and that didn't really yield the same kind of experience or the same results in my writing in that period.
The song Loadout Stay is about that experience of playing live and what happens after the audience leaves. And getting ready to talk to you, I was wondering how much of that still resonates today, or if getting, you know, the headaches of the road have started to outweigh, you know, the good sides of it.
Well, no. Headaches of the road, I mean, certainly there are some, but it's really like, it's a point of pride that you learn how to travel well. You learn how to travel and preserve your enthusiasm. There were tours that I remember thinking, now this is the best it's ever been. I can't, this is so great. And I felt that way for about 2 weeks. and then it just sort of went, you know, like it just sort of evaporated, and there was a grind going on. And I thought, what happened? Like, how do we make that last longer? Because you're going to be out here for another, like, a month or something, or 2 months, you know. And that became a serious ambition, you know. And part of it had to do with not, you know, like, I mean, eating well and making sure that you sleep and not not dissipating and giving respect to the music and not to the partying, you know, not living a salacious life that really takes away from your ability to play. And I mean, but even as late as, I mean, I played opening for Tom Petty a few years ago, and I was astounded by the seriousness with which they took that particular job. It's a covenant, really. Like, how do you make sure that then when you walk out there, you're going about doing the best show you've ever done again?
Now the seats are all empty. Let the roadies take the stage. Pack it up and tear it down. They're the first to come and the last to leave. Working for that minimum wage. They'll set it up in another town. Tonight the people were so fine. They waited there in line. And when they got up on their feet, they made the show.
And that's a real thing. That's not something that you tell people or say to people. It's not something that you'd be comfortable in announcing to people. This is the best, you know, we're going to come, you know, we're going to, this is going to be the best. You don't say it, you do that. So there are all kinds of aches and pains in growing older and all kinds of ways in which you try to, you know, make sure that you don't just, you know, come apart. Because it's a schedule that is kind of relentless. Without giving you details of my approach, you know, like there are all kinds of things you do to try to make the show. And that's back to the song you asked about, the loadout, how to make that contact with the audience and make that music as good as it can be. You know, they came there to hear that. They came to hear your best, you know, and very often it is. Sometimes, and when it can't be, for some immutable problem, you know, like the shape of the room is just not going to yield the best results. Or it's not as good as, it doesn't sound as good as it sounded last night. That's still no reason not to play, you know, to try to reach this place.
Will you stick around for the fireworks on Thursday?
We were wondering about that. I mean, I've actually never seen Tanglewood on the 4th of July, so we were wondering, there are going to be fireworks, right?
Yeah.
I guess that's what you call a hard curfew. I mean, like... Although, you know, well, I don't mind if some fireworks go off while we're still playing. We'll see. You know, we have an amazing crew and an amazing band, and it's going to be fun. I mean, I'm definitely thinking of ways to make this, you know, a really memorable concert for us and a special 4th of July.
Well, the legendary Jackson Browne will be at Tanglewood on the 4th of July. That's tomorrow. At 7 o'clock, and he goes on to ramble down at Levon Helm's Hudson Valley Barn starting July the 12th. His new concert DVD is I'll Do Anything Live in Concert. Jackson Browne, what a pleasure to have you on with us. Thank you so much, and enjoy your stay in Tanglewood, and don't make it 15 years between concerts this time.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.